Hello, I'm your host, Leonard Duncan. Welcome to a new episode of ATV Talk and Motorsports Podcast. Please join us every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We bring you interviews with industry professionals, live events, live news about the motorsports industry in every episode. Enjoy the show. Whether we are out riding with our friends and family or racing in extreme environments, we all need good tires. That's why I recommend GBC Power Sports Tires, a division of Greenball Corp. Their products, which include XC Master, Mini Master, and Groundbuster 3, are what leading professionals in the ATV-UTV industry are using. You can get your tires at greenballtires.com or find them on Instagram as GBC Tires for further inquiry. Are you looking for the best suspension technology for your sport ATV? Look no further than Elka Suspension, the industry leader in sport ATV suspension technology. With championship wins in prestigious events such as the Dakar Rally, SCORE, Best in the Desert, ATV MX, Cross Country, and Works, Elka Suspension has established itself as the go-to choice for athletes and enthusiasts alike. But they don't just stop at ATVs. They're constantly expanding into new markets, including UTVs, trucks, SUVs, pit bikes, snowmobiles, and more. Their commitment to innovation and quality means they're always looking to improve and adapt so you can enjoy a smooth ride wherever you go. Want to learn more about what Elka Suspension can do for you? Visit their website at elkasuspension.com. or give them a call at 450-655-4855. They will always be happy to answer your questions and help you find the perfect suspension solution for your needs. Ian Thomas, welcome to ATV Talk. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. So let's get it so everybody understands. Your Square One Speed channel.
Yes.
At the same time, and you are an enthusiast and a racer.
Yeah, so it's Square One Speed channel or Square One Speed on IG, on Instagram. And yeah, I've been an enthusiast for a long time and then finally started racing in my 30s, which was a great start, I suppose.
At least you did it.
Yeah, I can say I did it now.
You also... Are you still serving in the military?
Still am. I won't get too deep into that, but I still am.
Well, we appreciate everything you're doing, and we'll just leave it at that. How's that?
That sounds good, man. It's my pleasure.
Well, it's our pleasure. Thank you. So let's go back a little bit in your history of enthusiasm and talk about, you know, your early years into the ATVs.
Oh, man. Yeah, I could start right away with when I was a kid. First thing I ever hopped on was a Honda Big Red. I'm pretty sure it was a Big Red. And yeah. And then I think a Kawasaki Takati. It might have been a Takati. It was the three-wheeler, though. And that was like where it all kind of started, because that's what we used to hunt where we're from. So we would always use those. They had the rack on the back. You'd strap your rifles to them. You go out trudging through the woods on these things, hoping they would make it down the trail, because up where I'm from in northern Minnesota, there's a lot of mud and a lot of swamps. And most of the time we were just hopping off and lifting those things out of the water. But
Big Red would go through a lot of that.
It did. It really did. But we found ways to get it stuck all the time. So yeah, that was where like I got my first taste of ATVs was those three-wheelers. And then, you know, the uncles always had one, we had one, but they were always for work. But I always wanted to go out and play on them. That was my thing. So I got yelled at a lot to not go break them, because then we got to pay for it and this and that. I get it. But that was where the bug bit me, because I always had a ton of fun just riding those things down the trails up there, just going all over the place, romping those things through mud puddles, and having a good time with my cousins. Then, about 1999 when the 400EX was introduced, I remember the Dirt Wheels magazine I had bought right before deer season started. We went up there and I was just paging through the thing because that was the one I wanted. I saw it. I was like, oh man, when I get enough money, I'm going to buy one of these things. And of course, my dad says, yeah, sure. Whenever you save the money for it, pal, wink. And I always wondered, like, what are these things? Because I always thought of ATVs as like a work vehicle. Right. Then I saw the first one purpose-built for play, and that I had never even seen the 250R prior to that. So my first taste – yeah. First taste was actually the 400EX, and we had been to some – I think we went to the old Supercross races in the Minneapolis Metrodome. If you remember that, it had the inflatable roof on it.
Yep, yep, yep. I do.
Back, you know, when Dungy was still real young, that was back when you had like Chad Reed and those guys going at it. And that's where I got to see the racing. And then we went and saw some outdoor stuff up near my hometown at a place called Echo Valley. And that's where I saw the first actual sport ATV. And that was a few years after that 400EX I saw. And I saw a YFZ out there. I was like, what is that? It just, it caught me totally off guard. So saw that. Always wanted one, never had one. Grew up, I think I rode an LTZ 400 one time because a neighbor kid I knew had one, and I hopped on it, and I kind of learned to clutch it right there, and I was like, oh my God, this is addicting. And
I love the enthusiasm.
It just, when the bug bites you, you just kind of, you either go all in or you don't. So I went all in. As I said before, I dipped my toe in it, and now I'm neck deep at this point. So, it was not until I was in college where I ran into my friend, Mike Sack. He's also known as like Renegade Mike on Pete Hager's YouTube channel. And he's been a friend of mine since we met in 2006. I think it was the summer of 2006. We went to the same college and we were there for football training camp for that fall. And he said something about, he had sport quads and he raced sport quads. I'm like, you're kidding. He's like, no, I have this 400EX we built into this 470 monstrosity. They had, his dad had a Banshee and stuff like that. And I was like, I got to see this. He's like, well, come down. So during one of our breaks, I went down and visited and I actually got to ride another 400EX his dad had just put together out of like a box of spare parts. And right there was like my first real hook into it, where I bought that one eventually, rode the wheels off of that thing whenever I had the chance. We went and raced ice races on it, bunch of grass drags. They used to have like the national snowmobile grass drag races, and they had like pro lights and everything. We're four wide on these grass fields, and we're drag racing these things out there. And he had a little track in his backyard that I got to practice on, and yeah, that was the first real one. Then when I actually shipped off for the Army, I had to sell that one and didn't have one for, several years until I think it was 2010. I had picked up a used LTR 450 off of some guy in Alabama because the tracks weren't really letting quads out on them out in, I think it was near Birmingham, Alabama. And his son was into dirt bikes anyway, so he's like, I'm just going to get a bike so I can ride with my son. But he had a really well taken care of 08 LTR, and I snatched it up when I could and held on to that thing for a handful of years. Sold that after I got married. She still apologizes. And then it wasn't until I moved out here to Arizona that I finally got another one, and I had to dive headfirst into racing with it because I'd never really done any serious racing like work series and best in the desert and stuff like that. And since I was in Arizona, obviously I got to take advantage of it. And this is like an off-road mecca. So that's what I did. I hopped right into works racing on a stock machine in 2020 and I've just been slowly modifying and building it and other machines. I've got like four or five in the garage now and racing various different things. It's been awesome.
How does your family from Minnesota think about, or how do they take what you're doing with these workhorses that are play toys?
They think it's really cool now because they like, now that side-by-sides are out and we're able to get our trucks into more places, The 4x4 quads are a little bit more play. I see whenever I go back there and we happen to be up on our hunting land, okay, we're out riding them and having a good time now. They really do see the fun in it. I understand, you know, when money's tight, you know, you don't have a whole lot of dollars in the pocket. You're trying to save those machines and make them last. But now that everybody's, I mean, I'm grown up, all the kids are grown up, the grandparents and everything, they don't mind having a good time every once in a while. They're not so serious.
That's good. That's good. So you got them relaxed a little bit and got them into having a little good time on their ATV. You know, I never thought, not to change the subject, I never thought that the 4x4 quads would be that cool. And some of those machines, man, you can have a ball on them.
Oh, I could tell you the very first one I really wanted to ride and got to was actually just a Big Bear 350. But we could go ram that thing into all kinds of mud holes and somehow get it out and just do it again. I remember there was one time my cousin and I got that thing buried so many times and I had to hop out and get it unburied so many times. I almost couldn't even push it after the last attempt. I said, we got to go back because I'm not going to be able to get it out one more time. I think it was like 6 or 7 times we hopped in there. But
physically wore yourself out.
Literally, yeah. My legs were starting to buckle, and I was like, I can't do this anymore.
And you played football also?
Yeah, I started out playing soccer as a young kid, but I always wanted to play football. So I started in junior high and took it all the way to, like, the Division II college level. It was never really any bigger than that, but I played a year there.
Well, you're not a little man.
No. No.
I can see the football, you know. I can't see you playing soccer, though.
Nah, that went away pretty quick as soon as I grew up. I was definitely the biggest kid on the field.
Well, size in off-road racing and desert racing isn't near the hindrance that it is in TT and motocross. So I'm assuming that you're not having any issues with any of that.
No, it does come into play like during these works races near those last 3 laps, you know, last couple laps, the weight definitely starts to toll on you because you got to wrench yourself around on that machine. But having a little bit of leverage on these machines helps out here in the desert and things like that. As long as you get that thing up to steam, I have a pretty easy time keeping it on track at least.
Well, you're in pretty good shape for doing the things that you do as well. So your conditioning doesn't seem to be an issue, does it?
No, it was just definitely different. The type of conditioning I'm used to, you know, running so long, carrying heavy loads on the back, whatever it is. But hopping around on an ATV is just like it's a totally different set of muscles I was using. So I had to get used to it. And I can remember how bad the arm pump was because my first round was Blythe in 2020. And it was the double header, so I raced both days. And the arm pump was real. I was using the bottom of the hand to get that throttle in there. So
you could go to the man's throttle and put a twist throttle on there.
You know, I used that. Actually, that 400EX I rode the first time had a twist throttle on it. That was the first throttle I got used to. And I said, I don't mind it.
Well, you go back to that and less arm pump. It's easier to control.
Actually, that's what we put that on for Vegas Torino in 2022. We put a dual gasser on, the Terry Cable dual gasser. And that thing worked great. You pull the little lever and you got your thumb throttle. Or you push the lever. You can use just thumb throttle and twist throttle is locked. As soon as you pull that little pin, now you can use twist throttle. So it's kind of nice over that distance because we cut it into thirds. I think I covered 130 miles on my section. It was nice every once in a while. Just kind of pull the pin and use the twist throttle. It's very convenient.
Right. We had a in 17, 18, 19, and 20, we had a device on there, the twist thumb deal that came from Germany.
Really?
Yeah. And it's I preferred it over the one that you're talking about because it just seemed a little more stout, you know, and works great. Every time when we do a rider change in the pits, you just pull the lever up, move it over to the next hole, drop it in, And now you had a thumb throttle. You could, all you got to do is back out of the throttle, whether you're twist or thumb, and you could just, you could do it on the fly too, if you wanted to.
Well, that makes sense. Do you remember the company's name?
Oh, you have to ask me a hard question. I'll think about it because okay. I reached out to the builder and he's making me three more of them so that, because I have customers that want them.
Okay.
Yeah. The 450R that I built for Jason Blunt, he wants one because his son prefers thumb and he prefers twist. So that they both can ride that machine. He's going to set one up on it.
Oh, nice. So they can share and they don't got to worry about, you know, who's got what already set up on there.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's nice.
Yeah, I think it's great. I'll have to do a little bit of work to see what ODI grips fit on there. But once we figure that out, it'll be cake.
Yeah, I found that out with flex bars. When I was running like the longer grips, I realized I ran out of real estate pretty quick on those flex bars when they start bumping up into the bracket on the inside. So
yeah, you lose space in a hurry with that setup. But you figure it out, you know. You also said that you were married.
Yes.
How does your wife feel about the ATV stuff?
She races too. I built her own machine.
Badass. That is yeah. Awesome.
So that LTR that I was talking about, I drove all the way home on leave one time with that thing in the bed of the truck. That was from Georgia to Minnesota. And her family's down in southern Minnesota, and they had some hunting land near the Minnesota River. And her dad invited me out with the quad. He's like, you can go ride it out there. Sure. So I brought it out with me, and there were some nice trails and stuff, some berms right up against the river, which were really cool. And then I asked her if she wanted to ride on it. She said, hard pass. No, thank you. So I thought for sure, I was like, well, it's going to be hard to do this. Well, she doesn't want to be into it. But then when we moved out here and I got this one, I put her on it shortly after I got it. I got it running right because it just had like a dirty carburetor and stuff, just little maintenance issues. She got on it. I taught her to ride the clutch. And right then and there, she was hooked in as bad as I was. The only problem now is I need two.
It's not a bad problem to have, though.
No, I think if you do the quad math, if you have a quad sitting there and an extra bolt, that means you have to build a whole nother quad now.
Correct. one extra wheel. I need three more to make a set, right?
There you go. Just keep building and building, and then soon you got a whole garage full of them.
You don't want to see what my garage looks like. It's a sale of motorcycles and ATVs. Like where my studio is, I'm sitting here looking at a 1929 Ford Model A pickup.
Ooh.
And two TT500s, a VMAX, and a couple other. My studio's in my father's playroom. So he's got some pretty cool toys. So it's awesome to look at them. But in my garage, it's all ATVs.
Ah, yeah. Just a different backdrop.
Totally different backdrop. You know, it's functioning. We have to be able to work on them. Most of my jobs come from my day job. You know, I just sublet. You know, we don't have enough space to do it at that shop. Hey, I got a spot. We just bring it over to my shop, lay it out, and it sits there and goes together until we take it to the other shop, and that's where it gets finished off and given to the customer.
I guess that's not a bad problem to have.
It's stressful sometimes, but it's great. I mean, you're totally getting into the build segments. You know, I look at some of your photos and some of the things that you got going on, and you didn't just immerse yourself into it. You're like up to your ears.
Yeah. I pulled out the shovel and started burying myself in it is basically what happened. But I mean, there's some really cool stuff that goes on. Cause it started with the one machine where I just kind of started building it and expanding on it and finding different things and playing with it. But now we're going, to the other end of it, because I found out pretty quick, especially talking with like Doug and Jed and some of those guys, there's no such thing as a magic bullet. So I couldn't build one quad to do it all. So now we're kind of specializing each machine. I mean, it makes sense. So we have a desert machine. Now I've got the white MX machine. I just built the wife's specifically for MX, and we're going to take it out, you know, do Twisted Lizard Speedway with it again. We did it the first time. We're going to go back out. I'll have a separate works rig. I'll have an XC rig. I mean, I guarantee I'll have another garage. Whenever I move somewhere else, it'll be twice as big and still full of quads. I'm almost sure of it.
Well, because like you just said, you summed it up. There's no way to build a machine that can do everything.
No, there just isn't. There's no such thing. I tried it because, you know, just getting into it, I figured I'm calling roll design because I remember seeing a set of roll design arms on a LTZ 400 in a Huevos video a long time ago. I was like, I got to find out what that's about. Then you see roll design everywhere around you and you go, you know, it's got to be good stuff. So I hit them up. And when I'm talking to Jed about what I want in the shocks, that's where it all went off the rails. It's like, well, I ride in the desert. I do a lot of that. I go to the dunes. I want to race MX. I want to do it. He's like, listen, we can get you close, but it's not going to be that great at any of them. I was like, let's just get in the middle then. I figured it'll be okay. Well, then you start racing on it, and then your competitive side comes out. And you start just hard charging, and then you realize he was right. I can't do all of it. So.
Or you learn how to make those adjustments on those shocks to make it as good as it can be, even though it's not what it should be.
Right. I could get it close enough, so it would be great for a works race as long as I could stiffen it up and get that thing ready for like Havasu when you're just beating yourself up through the whoops. And then you realize, okay, that's what shock fade feels like. Now I know what that feels like, is you're just cooking shock fluid in that race. And then some of the other races where you're softening the thing up because you're just working with a little bit of chatter, like Prim, working with a lot of little chatter everywhere. And then you got some big jumps. As long as you're downsiding, you're pretty good with a plush setup. And then they put logs in there and you're like, oh, I don't know what to do for that. So you're working with rebound. And then we went and raced the same exact suspension. I took it and set it up as best I could for the Laughlin Desert Classic. So we set it up for that. And the first day was great. It did well because it wasn't much different than like a works track. It was a little bit rough, but they had a good infield section that was groomed. All right, that works. A little soft for it because I sent the Laughlin leap jump in fourth gear tapped out, not knowing that there was no landing on the other side because it was my first lap that day. And just sent it to the moon out into the flats. And I remember feeling that thing bottom out. And I went, oh, I hope the rest of the race goes well. Then the second day, after the trucks have had their say in it, and they've raked all that stuff off the edge of the course into the course, way rougher the second day for us. So I learned about getting specific suspension for it next time.
Right, exactly. And the people that you run into at the racetrack, I don't believe that you can run into any better people than at an ATV race.
Oh, God, no. I mean, those desert races in general, but specific examples, even Vegas Torino the first time, we're talking to anybody and everybody that we can think of that recommended us to another guy who races desert or anything like that. They're throwing all kinds of advice at you. Then when we're out on the track, that first year we weren't running blocks or anything. We just threw the GBCs on the wheels and we started racing. Well, we had another tire brand on there at first. They shredded both rears before pit two. And then we took off on another set. I think we shredded four tires in all that race, but there was another team somewhere that was willing to throw wheels and tires at us like the whole way. We had, I think in all, we shredded four tires. I ended the race on a GBC rear left and a eBay brand XC 400 random tire on the right. made it all the way to the finish. And one of the chase trucks had some other LTR 450 team's wheels and tires in the back. It's like, we're out of the race, take ours. And they even threw tools at us. And I remember loading the thing back up into the truck at the end of the race. It was still holding air. I was like, wow, we just got to make sure we get these other tires back to these guys. Found them at the banquet. All that said and done, I get home. And that rear XC400 eBay brand went flat when I got in the driveway. I was like, oh, my God. We just dodged a bullet on that one.
The learning curve is sharp and fast, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so.
Same with the quality parts to buy and the non-quality parts.
Correct. And we find out pretty quick which ones will hold and which ones won't. I'm willing to try just about anything. We've had some pretty good luck with some really off-brand stuff, or some cheaper brand stuff has held up for us. So we can kind of debunk some of those myths, but then other stuff does in fact hold true. But then you find out you can never go wrong with certain other things, you know.
Or you got lucky with those parts.
Right. You may have just got lucky.
You got the ones that were built on Wednesday, not on Monday or Friday.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, there always is something that's off brand that nobody realizes is a quality part. And then all of a sudden you figure it out.
Yeah. We've actually got this ATV I'm building right now. It's a 2007 TRX 450. And it was residing in Colorado. And we bought it with the help of FK Rod Ends and some other sponsors so that we could build it for amputee veterans. We're going to build it so they can race. It's going to be completely hand-controlled. And it came with this set of Elka factory shocks, if you remember those. They had the big bypass reservoirs on them. Huh. And me and Jason both looked at each other and went, what are those? Because I hadn't seen those before. And he's like, I think those were just before Elka 5s came out or something like that. So we start hitting people up around. Like I talked to Jed, actually. And Jed goes, oh, those are those old factory shocks. That bypass was pretty cool, but it didn't work as well as we were expecting. So you got like this name brand stuff. And you know Elka makes some good stuff, especially when Doug gets his hands on it, when you get Doug Roll in there and he revalves those things for you. But even he'll tell you, like, yeah, you might as well just take those reservoirs off. They're not really worth much.
Don't you just love – Doug is no frills, is he?
No, he's pretty much straight to the point.
Right. You know, it's one of those things. I don't think he has time to give you any frill. It's just – bang, bang, bang. Okay, I got to go to the next guy. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, he is a busy guy. He's a busy guy.
Incredible. I've been dealing with Doug for a long time, so I totally get it. If you can get a conversation with him, you're lucky.
Oh, I know. I did in Glen Helen because I was passing off one of my other frames so I could give them to him to get gusseted. I've never had a Doug Roll gusseted frame, so this will be a first. But when I was talking to him in Glen Helen, because I'm just walking the frame from my truck to his, he's already in three other conversations because he's also got to go to King of the Hammers that weekend to go work on the Miller Brothers machines. And I talked to him for, I think I had his ear for about 5, maybe 10 minutes. And you could tell right at the end, he's like, okay, I got to go. And then he just kind of walks off. He's like, yeah, all right, sorry, I'm holding you up. So he's got something else to do.
Yeah, because everybody's pulling on him. You know? I totally get it. I totally get it. I try not to even bother him, you know, because we can get off on certain conversations and I don't want to waste his time. I'm not coming over here with constructive things that you need to know. So I'll just let you do what you gotta do.
Right. I'd like to BS with you, but we're gonna have to hold that for a vacation day or something.
Yeah, we don't get those.
Yeah, you've already said that.
Yeah, what's a vacation day? What, no, really, what's a vacation day? Do they have those really? Do people get those?
They're rare.
Yeah.
They're rare.
Okay. I live in California, remember?
You guys have to work to sustain a living out there.
Yeah, they're trying to kill us.
Yeah.
That's so awesome that you're doing what you're doing. Tell me a little bit more about the machine that you're building for the veterans.
Oh, so like I said, it's a 2007 TRX 450 ER. We want to make sure we got the ER model because it's going to be all hand controlled. And it showed up with those Elkas, and it was also attached to a set of Gibson arms. And we thought about it, we're like, we might be able to rebuild these. And we talked to FK, and sure enough, they have all the part numbers so we can rebuild those arms. So we're able to hang on to those. It came with a RAF bumper, you know, some pretty basic stuff, you know, stock swing arm, just an extended stem, and a, I think it had a 490 big bore engine in it with like an ice cube cylinder on it. So we're gonna look at toning that back down because we're about to stick guys who are missing one or both legs on it, and we don't want them ripping their arms out because that's all they have to hang on with.
Right.
But what we're going to do to it is basically take all the foot controls out of it, per se, and we've got a, it's actually called a Clake. It's made by Moto Z all the way up in New York. These guys sent us this dual master cylinder for the left hand. It's a clutch and a brake lever on the same perch. So we can run... Yeah, we can run a steel braided brake line all the way back down to the rear brake, same spot that your emergency brake would be, but I think we're going to put it in line with the rear brake pedal because we do have a rider with a brake foot, so he can actually use it if he wants to. That's what he's used to. We'll leave the brake pedal on there. Then we have a shift solenoid. I think it's a Clicktronics kit, and we were able, or Jason, I should say Jason, because Jason's been busy behind the scenes gathering all the stuff up. And it is a Honda, I think it's a Honda Foreman switch block. And we found out that most of the connections between the Honda Foremans and the Honda TRX 450s are very similar. In fact, all the connections are almost identical, except the Honda Foreman has that electric shifter on it. So it has that little yellow switch you rock back and forth to shift gears. Well, we hooked it up to the Clicktronics kit Jason did in his garage, and you can actually shift up and down with the Clicktronics kit using that Honda Foreman switch block. So we'll have the electric start button on it and the shifter button on it for these guys, and it'll still have the on-off switch on it. So we're able to put all that on one switch block so we don't, like we said, eat up real estate on the handlebars, and everything can be on that left hand. Then the right hand is still the brake like normal, still have the normal throttle. We have one of those Terry Cable dual gassers for these guys. So one of the guys, Josh Rotkamp, he's a former Marine. He's missing his left leg. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's his left leg. And he has actually he rode dirt bikes in the Baja 500. So he's going to hop on there. He's going to like the twist throttle. That's what he's used to. And then Adam Poppenhaus, who's a dual amputee, he's got both his legs below the knee gone. He's used to the quad thumb throttle. And that guy actually raced an LTR with the same kind of shift kit on it in the Dirt Revolution last year, or the year before. It might have been the year before. So they raced an LTR, and they finished the race on it, albeit slow. They were able to finish the race. So we're trying to build this one to be a little bit more user-friendly for these guys. And then we're going to put Nerf bars on it with tread plates. So basically just aluminum plating underneath the Nerf bars instead of Nerf nets. Because, I mean, we don't want to see an amputee with his prosthetic just dangling off the side of the thing because it's caught in a net. But we'll put some tread plates underneath so that these guys have something to stick their feet down on, something solid. And then everything else should work as normal. You know, the seat, I think we're going to get a seat from, I think it was Jet Trim was talking about doing like a nice hump seat for these guys so they don't slide off the back because they're not going to be able to hook in with their feet very well. So we're going to build it, get it as clean and as polished as possible, make sure everything's working right. And then we're going to put these guys on this thing by the end of this year in the same Dirt Revolution race in Legacy and let them rip this thing around. We just want to make sure it runs right because I think we're going to have a stock engine. Going to try to tone it down a lot for them and make sure it just runs really good. Real clean rebuilt engine, and then a dual battery, but I think one battery will run the Shifttronics kit and the other battery will be taking charge from the stator so that you can connect the two. and we're going to figure out if we can keep it from having like a long parasitic draw or something on it. But we should be able to get it to work where this thing, one battery will control the shift electronics and the other battery hopefully draws and does the starter. What's that?
I know a guy that can help you with that.
I'll bet you do. You know a lot of people.
Yeah. I'm thinking of all kinds of cool things while you're saying this. Years back, probably 2012, we were approached trying to do some things like that. And at that time, the controls weren't made.
Okay? Right. They didn't exist back then.
So there was a guy, I can't think of his name. I will at some point, that was trying to make this stuff. And then a few years back, I did see the one control that you were talking about, that was the brake on the left-hand side. The thumb twist throttle, there's a couple different versions of those, which isn't a problem. I like the Nerf bar plate. You know, instead of a foot peg, you have an entire plate there.
Yeah, just a skid plate.
You almost need to, well, you guys are pretty into it, but you need to almost have it like a tray. So it has sides to it to a point a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's in there. I mean, I don't think they're going to be setting the world on fire, but some of these guys go pretty good.
I'm telling you, some of these guys don't mind the throttle. They really don't mind holding the throttle down. I think that dual brake and clutch setup was actually built around, you remember when stunt street bike riders were incredibly popular. I was into street bikes, you know, for a long time. I think that's what it was developed for, because this, if you look up Moto Z, his website is even based around street bikes and Harleys and stuff. And the stunt riders like having the brakes up on the hands, so they can still modulate the rear brake as they're keeping that thing in a wheelie. Well, the cool thing about it is when you pull in the brake, it automatically pulls in the clutch for you, so you don't have to worry about trying to hit both. But the clutch will operate separately from the brake. So I think that was where it was developed, was for those stunt riders, so they could use that thing.
And I totally understand that, because there are times when you want the brake to work and the clutch, so that you're doing, that guy's pretty talented to figure that out. And for these amputee guys, these veterans, man, that's just so awesome that you guys are doing that.
Man, we can't wait to get those guys out there.
So is something that it's going to be a, is there a fundraiser? How are you guys soliciting help? And what are you going to do to advertise that? Or what are you going to do for a reach out on that? Because ATV Talk, myself, we would love to help you in any way that we can, you know, whether we're advertising for you, or whether I'm getting sponsors to call you, or just getting people that need to solve little issues that you have to help you guys facilitate what you're trying to do.
Oh, yeah. It's so far, it's been a lot of cold calling, just talking to different sponsors. It started with an idea and we talked to the right people. Race to Race 22 made a lot of connections for us with like FK Rod Ends, because that's one of their big sponsors. And they helped them out getting veterans into like side-by-sides and things and rebuilding those for Craig McIntosh. And he races up in Legacy a lot. A lot of the Legacy racers, Vinny Ruiz, he's related to that group. And we talked with them. They were able to help us get started with it, but basically Jason and I started Team Blind it was kind of an inside joke, because it was just a term I coined up at a works race one time, and it's grown into now we're actually a team, and we have teamblindracing.com, which is a live website, and one of the fundraisers is a GoFundMe to help fund the machine. And then another thing that's going on is we got raffles going on right now for like superatv.com, blood lubricants. We have Lone Star involved with it now. So Lone Star was willing to give up a $500 gift card to Lone Star Racing. And we're going to raffle that off. Sun F Tires gave us $400, $200, and $100 gift certificates to raffle off. And all the money from the raffles goes towards the machine as well. And if you go on to teamblindracing.com, you can find a link to the GoFundMe, and you can see the raffles that are on there. We still have a ton of stuff we're trying to give away. I think South Point Hotel even gave a 2-night stay to raffle off to people so we can put money into this machine. So they've been a big help lately too.
Has Legacy got involved with you guys at all?
No, Jason has raced Legacy and he's talked with them. And I don't know if we've had any more with them about this particular stuff, but I know Legacy has been really open to veterans and stuff, racing with them and helping veterans as far as like entry fees and stuff like that, trying to help them reduce entry fees so they can get guys in there. And they were totally cool with getting all the amputees on these machines and getting out to these Legacy races. They love seeing it. They love having quads out at those races at Legacy for sure. That's actually one of the things they made a point of.
Well, you need to get hold of Don and have a conversation with that guy. I had seen him at Best in the Desert races years back, but I got him on the show Wednesday night on my live Instagram. And he is a dedicated enthusiast for racing in a hole, whether it's an ATV, a motorcycle, a three-wheeler, a car, a truck, whatever it is. This guy wants everybody in the world to support it. And I think he truly, truly cares. So I believe if you have a conversation with him, it will blossom into things I don't think you're prepared for.
We're looking for trucks.
I believe that there's a link there that you really need to reach out to. Brett Greenholtz knows him and speaks with him. That's how I got in touch with him.
Okay.
I'm trying to get Don, as busy as he is, to sit down with me and tape a show and talk about his history and you know, really what it takes to put on a desert race and how deep it gets, because we all take it for granted. You know,
I was just going to say that's a good way of putting it, because we really do. I just knew about Best in the Desert because for so many years, you know, growing up so far away from this stuff out here, I knew about Vegas to Reno because I knew it was hot, it was long, it was fast, you know, it was dusty. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So that just stuck with my mind. But then Legacy Racing pops up. All of a sudden, I start noticing there's all these other promotions around, and Legacy's really trying to dump their time and money into this stuff. It's like, well, I'd like to go racing with them too. I've had a really good experience so far with Best of the Desert. I can't really say much against them. I've been having a lot of fun racing these races. Laughlin Desert Classic was so much fun. Me and Jason still talk about it every time.
You know, I can't say anything negative about them myself, because I've had an amazing time racing Best in the Desert.
Yeah.
I don't think that you'll see me out racing anymore.
Maybe I could egg you on.
I could be egged on, but I don't know if my wife would sign off on it.
All right.
You know, I'm still recovering from injuries that I received in 2004. So, and she has to live with some of that. And, she would never tell me not to go riding, but I don't know if they'll let me race. So she's game for a lot of things. So, as long as she doesn't have to go play in the dirt, she's okay with it.
All right. Well, you know, it's been a lot of fun messing with this stuff. I can see at some point maybe I'll age out into something else with a cage. But for now, what's been really cool is racing Best in the Desert because of the legacy behind all that stuff, all the stories and the history behind Best in the Desert. You know, Casey Folks and everybody who knows about him still talks about him to this day. And then Legacy Racing has this other thing with that Baja Nevada now being the longest race on U.S. soil, but it's not single day. It's over 2 days, but I thought that was really cool that they were able to connect Baja Nevada like that, you know, out and back 650 miles. That's freaking cool to me. That's rad. I just want to do cool stuff until I die is basically what it is.
You need to go listen to Wednesday's show that was last Wednesday on Instagram. I think they're going to have a 1,000-miler.
I hope that happens. I hear about all the nightmares that go on with guys trying to cross the border and do Baja all the time. And some guys have an okay time with it, but
you know what? Let me just, you know, if you're an ass, you'll have problems. If you're a clean guy and you're following the rules and you're respectful of the country you're going to, you will have zero issues.
Okay. So sometimes it's the people telling the story.
And then there's sometimes people think they're in the United States. They think they have rights. They think that there's nothing to worry about. Okay. You got to be safe. You got to be smart. You travel in groups. You don't go places you shouldn't go. You know, you're not going to get everything in Mexico that you get at home. The food's different. Some of the sodas are different. Some of the things are different. And if you're expecting it to be like it is at your local restaurant, it's not. I'm sorry, you're in a different country, different customs. I mean, I'm married to a Mexican. I love it. We go to TJ all the time, and we have no problems. And it's not because I'm with a Mexican. It's because you just have to embrace the culture and the people. It's the same when I wasn't going to South America, or you know, when you go over to Europe. You just embrace the culture you're in. And Americans get a bad rap because Americans are boastful assholes.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, I've been accused of that myself, but not in a foreign country. I shut my mouth and I try to listen to what's going on. And if I can't speak the language, I will do my best to make the person understand I'm trying to communicate with you and not be a jerk about it.
Yeah.
And then they respect that. And then most of the time what they do is they turn around and speak English to you.
Well, one thing I think we need to throw out of the argument is food and drinks down there. Because if you don't go to Baja expecting to get good food or Coca-Cola, like really good Coca-Cola, then you've completely missed the mark anyway. But I could see how some people go down there, you know, loaded up on their ego a little bit, thinking, I'm an American, I should be able to walk wherever I want down. It's like, it doesn't work that way. But who doesn't love tacos, especially down there? Come on, man.
Dude, and Mexican food in Arizona, Mexican food in California are different. But the Mexican food that everybody thinks they're eating in Southern California, even though you can come a mile from the border, it ain't the same. When you go down and have traditional Mexican food, it is phenomenally good, and it's nothing like you think it is.
No, I'll agree with that. I'm just going back to a trip I did to Cancun one time. We went inland. We were going to the pyramids of Chichen Itza, and we stopped at a village along the way, and they let us off the bus, and they said, hey, this is a village we stop and visit all the time. And, you know, the locals are happy to, you know, make a little bit of money as you're buying souvenirs and trinkets, whatever. But then I walked into this one cover, and this lady was making tortillas on a rock. She was baking them on a rock, and she put what looked like jelly in the thing. I was like, wait a minute, what is this? She goes, would you like to try it? Yeah. She hands it to me rolled up. Best thing I've eaten down there. Almost bar none. It was like a homemade rolled taco, basically, and it was awesome. I still think about it.
We traveled to the eastern southern portion of Tijuana, which we didn't get to Rosarito, but we kept going like across the border next to the river. And moved east. It's a lot less populated, a lot less buildings, and it's just you're getting into a little bit of farmland, little different stuff. And went back in there, and we stopped at this store to buy something. We went to this specific area for a reason. And across the street from the place we went had an old clay oven, and they were making bread and other things. And I'm, you know, the sweets down there are made from different sugars than we use up here.
Right.
and this lady was making some rolls. I don't remember what they were called. My God. Thank God my wife limits how many I eat, or I'd weigh 700 pounds because these things were so good and they were fresh right out of that old archaic rock clay oven that was built in there. You know, instead of having a garage where they parked the car, they had an oven.
It's probably been there for 100 years.
It'd been there a long time.
Was that the one where they slapped like the bread up against the side of the oven and let it bake that way? Or was it?
This is where they slide it in.
Okay.
The oven, and it cooks inside, you know, and they, you know, put the wood on the underneath side of it. It's just round. It's a dome.
Yeah.
Coolest thing. You know what? I probably couldn't drive back there to save my life, but man.
If you ever found it again.
That was good food. Yeah. You know, I instantly quit thinking about what I was there to buy and went right across the street, right to the oven. Oh, hey, this is great. You know, what do we got in here? And my wife was laughing. Okay. She went and talked to the lady for me and, you know, brought me back a bag of treats. And
tell me what you got.
Yeah. I was happy camper, you know, and got some pastry. They weren't pastries, but you know, they were sweets, like sweet bread and cinnamon rolls, things like that. Oh, I was in heaven for the drive home. But so Mexico is a safe place to race. Just remember, you're in Mexico. You're not in America. The bad thing about racing in Mexico is you fall off. You need help. It's a long ways away.
Yeah. That's definitely different.
You fall off at a legacy race, you fall off at Best in the Desert race or a works race, they could have you at a hospital in, you know, 5 to 12 minutes.
You could. Well, another story on that. Just a perfect example. Racing Vegas to Reno last year. I broke a foot peg off around just before pit 5. You know, I ended up breaking my leg, but was able to continue riding. So we got the machine in the next pit. I was walking around, you know, a little sore, handed off, and we're thinking, maybe it's not that bad of a day. But then several pits later, we were able to get like a 400EX peg to fit onto our machine, keep racing, and my buddy Mike hopped on because he was our auxiliary rider. And I was hurt and Jason was hurt because Jason got bucked off in a G out before pit 2. And within, I want to say, 5 minutes of either of our injuries, someone was rolling by and they would slow down and ask you, "Hey man, are you all right? Is everything going on? Is everything okay?" Yeah, everything's all right. We're going to be okay. You know, Jason was a little more hurt than I was, even though I broke my leg. You know, it was just a leg. I was hanging on, still sitting on the machine, and someone was just within range. But then when Mike hopped on after pit 8 on his way to pit 9, he comes across a guy who had been bucked off his motorcycle and broke his femur, and his leg was laying backwards. And Mike just stops. Middle course, hops over, finds a kid unconscious, stays with him, and within, it was about an hour and a half before the helicopter actually got to him, but Mike's already a first responder. He's an officer up in Minnesota, but he stayed with him because he's a first responder. Helicopter's already into the canyon, picking this kid out, and took him to the closest hospital, and I think he ended up in Phoenix, and we were able to stay in communication the whole time. I don't foresee a lot of that happening down in Baja. I'm not sure if that's a thing down there.
There's some medical, but there's, if it's a serious deal, they're bringing you back to the States. And that's the problem. You know, the transition time. If one of the guys donates their helicopter, the transition time is way less. But if you still have to be put in an ambulance, taken to the border, put in another ambulance, you know, one of the things they do if when you get treated in a Mexican hospital is before you get to check out is you have to pay the bill.
All right. Yeah. It's cash up front, basically.
Yep. And that gets a little sticky for some people. But, I get it. I understand why, because some people would never go back.
Right.
You know, they're not funded by the government like we are in that aspect, because you'd be going to a private hospital. You're going to a cash-based hospital.
I mean,
it is what it is. You know, I think that it's still safe. I've raced down there. I've traveled down in Mexico. I've traveled in South America, all these other places. And it is what you make it. You know, I think you've done some traveling around the world yourself. And maybe not in the same aspect that I have, but it's what you make it. When you're out on your own, not in your normal job, if you're a jerk, they're jerks. If you're good, they're good. For the most part.
Yeah. Well, that brings up another point then, because one of the other things we had out there, we carried our phones on us. We were able to text each other from different pits, and I was able to run over and talk to Best in the Desert crew who were hanging out in the Gabs pit up in the town there, and they're relaying over radios, and they're in constant communication. How much constant communication is going on down there?
A lot more than you think.
Okay.
Radio relay is really good. It's gotten way better, and a lot of the people have satellite systems, you know, in their trucks and their chase trucks, the race trucks. You know, most of the racers, if they see a situation, they're stopping to help because they know. And maybe not as much in the truck teams, but I've still seen truck teams throw a stop things to help because they know there's nobody coming.
Yeah, well, I suppose, too, if it's anything more than just a twisted ankle, we might have to stop for this one. If a guy's unconscious, you know, laying there upside down,
right?
That would make sense.
Safety is always the best policy. You know, you've got to take care of everybody. But we've gotten off ATVs and gotten into a different topic. I want you to keep me posted on this veterans machine privately or non-privately. You can reach out to me on Instagram, or you have my contact, text me. If you need help, if you are having trouble with finding something, if you need flyers posted, get a hold of me. We will do everything to facilitate that. I want this to go for you guys. I want it to be a great thing. And I don't want any corners cut because you ran out of funding or there was a problem and you couldn't make something work. You know, let's get everybody that should be involved and make it so that these guys can have a great race or a great time riding, because they deserve it. And you guys need to be taken care of for your efforts as well.
Well, thank you, Lenny. Yeah, I'll absolutely stay in touch with you, man. I know you're into this stuff. Another thing we're willing to do is, I've sabotaged my machines to make sure one machine is running right, you know, because I had better shocks or whatever it is. So I don't mind.
The team here at ATV Talk would love your feedback. Please email us at hello@atvtalkpodcast.com. San Diego's Body Evolution and Wellness Center, with over 17 years experience, Dr. Heidi looking out after all your chiropractic needs, and Coach PJ looking out after all your fitness needs. Visit our website, www.bodyevolution.org, or call for an appointment, 619-987-8875. If you're in need of a consultation for your current racing program, a custom ATV, or an industry guest speaker, I have the company for you. Duncan Technologies International Inc. offers host, MC, and guest speaking services at events, builds custom ATVs for recreational riding or racing around the world, and they offer consulting services for professional teams or individual racers. Send inquiries to DuncanTechInternational@gmail.com or call 619-716-1532 for more information. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, don't forget to share us with your family and friends. The podcast is available on all streaming platforms, and you can find us on social media as ATV Talk Podcast. We're on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, Rumble, and Twitter.